Good morning. I've been here at St. Wenceslas just over 1 year now. And I was reflecting this past week about this past year and how incredibly happy and grateful I am to be your guys' pastor. I'm incredibly blessed to be here. And I hope it's been good for you being my sheep as well. You haven't driven me out of town yet, so there's still hope. But I just want to thank you. It's been an incredible blessing to be your pastor here, even just this past year. One of the great responsibilities I have as a pastor is to help prepare you for the moment when you close your eyes in this life and you open them in the next. That when you close your eyes in this life and you open them in the next, you'll see the face of God and you'll face judgment. Now, judgment, if you've lived with Christ in this life and you die with him, is no reason for fear. But one of the things that the church teaches us is that right after you die, you face God in judgment. One of the things that we only have hints of, though, is what that judgment looks like, what it consists in. One of the hints that we have is, you've heard of people who have near-death experiences, right? And they describe it as seeing their whole life flash before their eyes. And they're not just being dramatic. People who have been on the closer to the death side of near-death experiences will speak about seeing their life laid out in front of them. And that judgment to be something like seeing your own life in one glance laid out before you as a film. But you see it now differently. That you see all the things that you didn't see in this life. You see God's hand guiding you throughout. God in his presence with you. You begin to see in that vision of your life all the spiritual realities that we're surrounded by at all times and the impact that those have on your life. But you see the hand of God in your life much more clearly. And this is something that can bring both consolation and it can bring a convicting of heart as well. To be able to see in your life and to see God's hand in it can console the heart because you'll be able to see how in the greatest struggles of your life that God was particularly close to you during those times. Many of you have seen or you've heard that poem, Footprints in the Sand, haven't you? It's a little sentimental, right? But it's one in which, if you've gone through the loss, the painful, sharp loss of someone very close to you, your sibling, your child, your spouse, you see the truth in that. That if you look at your life and you're able to see it from God's eyes, you see that in the most painful, difficult times, God carries you through that in many ways. For me, when my younger brother died, we had that poem in our house, and I found great spiritual consolation in that, of understanding God and his hand working in our lives in that way. Seeing this, though, can also convict the heart. That you'll be able to look and to see your life laid out before you and to see how God brought particular people into your life. Particular people that God specifically brought into your life knowing that only you could reach them. Only you were able to speak the truth to that particular person. And we'll see that in our lives, and we'll see times in which we responded to that, and we'll see as well the times in which God brought someone into your life, or they crossed your path at a certain point, and where you failed. And this brings a purging sorrow into our heart when you see this. Some of you have seen the film Schindler's List. And at the very end of the film, Oskar Schindler, who had a factory in which he brought in during the Holocaust thousands of Jews and saved them. And he did this very much in the beginning for his own profit, for his own benefit. And at the end, as the war is coming to a close and he has to flee, he's leaving the factory and all the workers are out there, and he breaks down sobbing. He breaks down weeping, and he said, "I could have done more. I could have done more. This car that I had, why didn't I sell it? That's 10 lives. This ring, this is gold. This would have been 3 lives. This watch, that's another 5 lives that I could have saved." It's a sorrow which is one that purges the heart. It purifies it. And this is a sorrow, this is a purging that has to take place in our hearts, either in this life or in the next. I want to flash before your eyes the 3 readings that we have today, and to flash your own life there as well. In the reading that Paul writes to the Ephesians, he speaks about God choosing us before the foundation of the world. That before God had created anything, God knew he was going to create you. From the very beginning of time, meaning from all of eternity, you were a thought within God's mind. And he knew he was going to create you with every weird personality quirk that you have. He knew he was going to create you, and he knew the plans that he had for you in your life. The first reading we hear from Amos, that you're called to be a prophet. And like Amos, you might say, but I'm just a simple person. Amos said, I'm just a shepherd. I'm a dresser of sycamore trees. I was never built to be a prophet. I wasn't educated for this. But you, when you were baptized as priest, prophet, and king. You are a prophet. It's a matter of if you live that out. And then you may say, like Amos, but I'm just a rancher. I'm just a simple school teacher. I just work a 9-to-5 job. I don't have all that fancy education like Deacon Stockard has from his deacon classes. Or Father Shea, you were over in Rome for all those studies. I never got to do that. How am I supposed to be a prophet? God has given you a particular way to reach people with the truth that he's planted in your heart and with your life experience that he hasn't given to Deacon and I. There are people that he and I and the greatest living saint today could never reach, but you can. You're called to be a prophet, to speak God's truth to the world. And in the gospel, like the apostles, you're sent out to others. You're a prophet for others. And in that, you have to rely entirely on God. Don't take anything with you, just a walking stick. You have to rely entirely on him. And when you bring the gospel to others, a big fear that we have, right? Let's be honest for a second. It's the fear of rejection. That I do this, I speak the truth to others, I'll be rejected. God says, if you are rejected, if you speak the truth, dust, shake the dust off your sandals. Brush the dust off your shoulders. That's not on you. You can't let that stick and be the weight on your shoulder. God just asks you to be his voice, not to bear the weight of every success and every failure is on you. God calls us to be faithful. Not necessarily successful, faithful. But there are people in your life that God has placed in your path that only you can reach. And you're called to be a prophet to them. As St. Francis said, yes, to preach the gospel at all times. And when necessary, and that necessary happens, probably more than we like, use words. Yes, pray for people, but you're called at times to speak the truth to them as well. How can you do this? I'm going to give you just 3. There's many more. but just three simple things. First of all, if in your heart you have some love for the church, you have some love for the church in your heart, defend her when she's attacked. If you were at a crowd and someone started attacking your wife, people are talking about her, and they don't even know that you're her husband, or they're talking about your husband and they don't know you're your wife. They're saying about, oh man, she is ugly. I mean, not just a little ugly, but really ugly. And that guy over there, pointing to your husband, man, he is an idiot. He's like an extra level of stupid. Or your kids, they're sitting talking about your children, talking about how worthless they are, and what an embarrassment they must be to their parents. Are you going to just stand by and say, well, I better not say anything, I don't want to offend anybody? No, you're going to stand up for these people who you love dearly. You know your kids aren't perfect. You know they're flawed. I hope that's not a news flash to you. But if someone's talking about them, ripping into them, you're not just going to stand by. You're going to speak up. The church, which is made up of us, is flawed as well. But when people attack her, to be able to be a voice that speaks up for her. The second thing is St. Peter, in his letter, says that we're to be ready at all times to give a reason for the hope that is within us. Be ready to give a reason for the things that you believe. When people leave the church, one of the things they say is that, I had all kinds of questions, but nobody could give me an answer. You and your professions are able to learn all sorts of complex things. To learn in your faith the basics of what we believe, what the church believes in its moral teaching, what it believes of the basics of the faith. That if someone asks you, why are you voting for this political candidate rather than this one? You're usually able to give reasons why this is the person you should vote for. Instead of saying, well, I mean, I'll vote for my person, you vote for your person. No, you believe that one is better for everyone. And how much more is the faith than that? That the world we live in isn't a relativistic world anymore. Or you know what, you live your life and I'll live mine. You believe what you want, I'll believe what I want. That's not the world we live in anymore. It's one in which it's people believe with an ideology that this is the truth. And they're going to do whatever they can to make others believe it and follow that. But God has the truth, and this is what we have within us. And there are incredible things that we have to be able, which we didn't have 10, 15 years ago, to learn these basics of the faith on the internet, form.org, which the parish has, Catholic radio. I think of an example a couple weeks ago of my mom. She called and she said that she got into this conversation with someone, a relative, about a real hot moral topic. And she wasn't looking for the conversation, trust me. But she said, I don't know if I said the right thing. I don't know how to speak like this, like you and your brother and these people on the radio. I said, Mom, what did you tell them? She told me. She just spoke the truth of the faith, the simple truths that she knew, and she spoke them with love. I say, Mom, that's exactly what God was calling you to do then. And he brought this person into your path for a reason at that moment. To speak the truth. And to be able to give a reason for the things that you believe. Lastly, parishioners, beware of false prophets. And do not be a false prophet. And these are false prophets in the world, but also within the church as well. How do you know, how do you tell who a false prophet is? There's two marks that you can smell. It's the rank of pride and disobedience. Because those are the two marks of Satan himself. his pride and his disobedience. The mark of a true prophet is someone who speaks the truth, even if it's hard, and they speak it in charity. That those two cannot exist apart from one another, truth and charity, because they are God. And that one speaks the truth to shed light, not to cast heat or to burn others. God also, he resists the proud, even when they're right. Even when the proud are right, God resists them because he has to. So when I close my eyes for the last time, and I open them up again and I face judgment, I have to respond in seeing you, my parishioners, who are in my life at this moment as your pastor. I have to be able to see, was I a prophet to you? Did I speak the truth to you? And did I speak it with true charity? This is the same thing that you'll have to see when you see at judgment your own life. The people that God draws into your life, that only you can reach, were you a prophet to them? Did you speak the truth to them? Did you do it with real charity? Were you a prophet to them?